Welcome to Culinary Convo. I am your host, Devin Ream. The coffee is poured and your spot at the table is open. I've got my mise en place, and if your mind is open, let us begin. Hey, everybody. Welcome to Convo Sessions. I am here with Marco Schalma. How's it going, Marco?
It's going pretty well, man. It's going pretty well.
Yeah.
8 p.m. at night, you're catching me right over there, like at the end of a long, beautiful day, and I appreciate you, man.
Absolutely. I appreciate you coming on. Like you were saying, we're coastal. We're both coasting right now, and I tell you, you've got it perfect on your head right now, Bronx Night Market. Dude, I'm looking through the Bronx Night Market stuff that you've got through your website, by the way. Yep. MASC, hospitalitygroup.com. Go to that. Check it out. Check out all the events, the campaigns they got going on. That Bronx Night Market, man. I have been, like, looking for something out here in Portland that can meet that type of, like, not only quality of foods coming in, but just that energy, right? That vibe. And we have carts out here, right? We got food pods and all sorts of stuff. But It's like a party, man. Tell me about it. What's going on with Bronx Night Market lately?
Yo, you know, I'm so happy you said that because, you know, sometimes people look at it, you know, face value and they say, like, okay, food carts, food vendors, you know, we've seen it before. Like, we've seen it anywhere from farmers market and whatnot. But what we do is so different. What we do is basically we kind of bring in the culture and the community and combining that with the cuisine. So the idea is take as much variety as possible, as much of the global cuisine as possible. Small micro businesses, mostly family owned, you know, immigrants, POC, you know, LGBTQIA, and add the cultural element. The cultural element means, like, you know, performances, music. Like, and I'm talking about, you know, top grade music, you know, large stages, light show, we're doing graffiti shows, anything that we can add to the experience, you know, and for us, it's a full experience. Now, you come, you know, anytime you come to one of those events, you see way more than just the food. And that type of event resonated so well and really pushed us forward, you know, in New York and beyond New York, you know, and I appreciate you noticing that. Thank you, man.
Yeah. No, I mean, it's like, it's one of those things, it's infectious. You know what I mean? Like, I can only imagine, and that's why I'm seeing Bronx Night Market, then you have the Harlem Bazaar, so that covers the, like, non-food type of things, right? Your more cultural type of things going in. And so that's, like, kind of the beauty of everything is, like you were saying, if you bring the food in, it's like it attracts a lot more than just food or just those types of, you know, the people that want that kind of food. They're going everywhere, right? And so, like, what has been the biggest surprise with some of these markets that you've had that you were like, that was unintended, but this is great?
You know, it's such a good question. The biggest thing that we discovered this year, you know, and it came just like out of talking to people randomly in one of the events, because we run the Bronx Night Market, the Uptown Night Market, which is based in Harlem, and the Brooklyn Night Market. And in one of the conversations, it was just like, as we're closing one of the events, we're wrapping it up, we're folding a thing. This is like, you know, cleaning up the floors and whatnot. And people came to us and said, hey, you know, we go all over the city to follow your event. And it's like, you don't really do that. You don't really go to a foodie event, you know, like, as if it was like a traveling circus or like some sort of like an activity that you can't see that. But people are doing that. And it just sent us, it just kind of clicked on us. It's like, wow, we actually doing something that people really resonate with and really love. And it's freaking awesome, man.
Yeah. It's like you were saying, being a hospitality group and not like a specific segment of like this property or this restaurant, this ownership, like, type of thing. Yeah, it brings like a whole new vibe of where, like you were saying, the next time you throw an event, they're like, no, we want MASC. They are going to be the ones that are going to provide you like the ambiance, the food, the vibe, all of that. And I'm glad that, like, in recent history here, vibe has become like an actual instance of a word that you have to care about. Because you do. Yeah. Like, you can bring all these, you know, different food carts together. You can bring, you know, music. You can try to bring as many people as you can. But you got to make them stay. And you got to make them like it. You got to make them want to come back each time the event happens. And so it's got to be lively, but it's got to have, like, a chill factor to it that's kind of like, yeah, man, I just enjoy being here. And that's... Yeah, it seems like that is what people are getting out of all these events that you're throwing, whether it's the, you know, night markets or the bazaar, the flea market, all of that. And that's just the event side. Now, I know you do campaigns, so you've got like We Eat at Night. I noticed you guys did a New York segment on that. And tell me, the We Eat at Night, how's that been going? How has that been kind of like translating?
I want to tell you that, but before I tell you that, I got to say something to that. The last statement that you did about the vibe, man, it's like you're sitting in my meetings with my team and literally just recited everything I tell them on a regular basis. You know, the experience, the vibe, the ambience, the value that we add, you know, added value that we do. It's not just food. So I think you've been listening to my meetings. We're going to have to talk about it after this.
Yeah,
but when it comes to We Eat at Night, you know, We Eat at Night is kind of like a crazy idea. A few years ago, we were like the second company in the East Coast to do like a night market. You know, we were like the like really the second one to jump in, and I realized really early on that's like it's becoming such a popular thing in the United States, especially in the post pandemic where. You want to be outside more and more, you know, you want to, people want to experience other people. They want to be outdoors. It just kind of made sense. And I saw like, you know what, this is going to be the next wave, you know, for the next like foreseeable future, like 4, 5, 10 years. And while we do the night markets in New York and the event, how do we explore something bigger than that? And the whole idea was, wait a minute, if I live in New York and I want to go to Portland right now, and I'm a big foodie and fan, I want to know what the scene is like over there. I want to know what the Portland scene is as far as night market, or like late night food. So, and then what we did is created this incredibly stylish publication, online publication, digital, that's going to give every week, you're going to get like a newsletter, comes to your, you know, your email box, your inbox, and it's just going to have the best nuggets of a destination in the United States. When it has, like we're talking about, insider tips, you know, late night grabs, like that, those little hole in the wall that only regulars and locals knows there. And, you know, and you can plan your food trip. You know, it's like the travel for food element.
Totally. Yeah. And like you were saying, the whole like night part of it, I think that's where like a lot of folks are starting to trend towards because of all the warmer temps. I was telling my wife about that. I was like, you know, like when you go somewhere at night, even though if you have a ton of lighting, got to worry about some bugs depending on where you're at. But like otherwise, it's like it is a lot cooler. You have cooler lighting. So like as a food cart or somebody who was doing crafts or trying to sell something, lighting, man, like nothing brings people. We are practically the bugs. We get attracted to light. That is what we want to see. We want to see neon. We want to see signs, something in an LED screen. We start going towards it and then we're like, oh. And so like, I'm not kidding. There's something that suckers me in about a big, whether it's like a TV or like somebody has an LED board and it has a menu on it and glasses guy, I see it from afar. I'm like, that place. That's the one I want to go to, right?
And add to that the smell element. Add to that like some good, sexy smell of like something grilling or like some, you know, deliciousness. And that's it. It's a done deal. Yeah. You're just like zombie away over there just without even noticing.
Exactly. Yeah.
You don't need the glasses. Go.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And like you were saying with the eating at night, walking around a town, I know Portland specifically, a lot of people say it about San Fran, but Portland, it can be hilly. It can be hilly. And so bigger guy like me, I'm walking around in the middle of the day. Yeah, right. Like, it is hot. I am going to be sweating like crazy, schwitzing, whatever you want to call it. It is going to be a rough time for me. And then all of a sudden, I'm going into this place, and I'm like, yeah, man, I just want more hot food. Yeah, right. Like, come on. That's what, and that's what I noticed. A lot of your night markets, they do, it is perfect timing. April through, like, September to November, somewhere in that range. You keep the, the good warm vibe. But yeah, nighttime, going out, it's one of those things where I can't wait to see the popularity of these things to keep going. I can see it's already big there. Like, it's already going hard there. LA,
it's kind of funny.
You know? Yeah, it does it there.
Well, LA got the, you know, I just read, like, last week, LA got the biggest one in the country. I mean, because they got space, you know, like, you got they got the open space. New York, you got to remember, New York is a tiny little island that's, like, populated everywhere, and every piece of real estate is just so expensive and valuable. You know, you can't do anything. So finding good places in New York is, it is a challenge. But nighttime, you know, there's a whole magic to that. You know, like you said, first of all, you don't have to schwitz. That's number one important, right? I agree with you.
Yeah.
And then, you know, it's you lose some of the attitude, the daytime attitude. You relax a little bit. People are nicer at night. You know, like, you have a drink, you walk around, you eat. The lights does some effect to that. And in general, it's just such a better atmosphere.
Yeah.
And the entire idea of that night market, you know, if you trace it back to Asia, you know, along line of that, it's basically like working area or hangout area that you have, like, tens and dozens of stands. Each stand is known for, like, a specific item that they do. So, like, you go to this guy, he's making those, you know, grilled shish kebabs thing, and this one octopus legs, and this one this and that. And I think, like, taking that idea and then kind of slightly westernizing it, making it more adaptable. What I like about it is that you go and you have the fancy food. You have the vendors that give you, like, that, those, you know, food porn Instagrammable items. But then you have those, you know, immigrants and family that do that one thing that they've done in their family for, like, 50 years. And the flavor is, like, second to none, you know, and it's just incredible. And you know what the best thing about night market? When you go to a restaurant, they give you a menu that they think give you everything that you need. But when you go to a night market, you go with your wife, you go with a couple of friends, each one of you can try something completely different from a different cuisine that is specific to that cuisine. And you can all enjoy it and share and swap flavors and whatnot. It's a perfect thing.
Yeah, and that's what I thought was so interesting about these night markets that you have. Is I was just totally impressed that, and I say this like in the best way possible, it is about a little bit about restraint, because it's the, you know, last Thursday or last Saturday of the month, whatever it may be. So it's like a one time a month thing. And I know some people would be like, you know, you get, what is it? If you get greedy, pigs live, but hogs get slaughtered, right?
Yeah,
like, I think that's true with stuff like this, because if you have just a market there all the time, you know, with carts and things, you might develop a presence. It's there. People like it, what have you. But once again, like you said, in New York, hard to own that space full time. It's expensive. You got to meet those bills, all those things. But doing it once, it has basically the once a month, it has that presence of like, hey, me, you, family member, friend, hey, from April through September, once a month, last Thursday, Friday, Saturday, whatever it may be, we're going to go to this thing. Cause like you were saying, there's like five or six trucks I want to try, or there's, you know, two or three places that I've heard about. They do this one thing that's supposed to be amazing. I want to see if it's worth the hype. I want to go and try it. And then they go and they do it throughout that time. And then, like you said, they wait for it for the next year. You've got your same old standbys, but then there might be a couple new ones. And so I whenever I saw that, I thought, yeah, like that is, you have to keep that kind of exclusivity of like, no, it's this one time. And that's when you go, because one, it fits the vibe. You can't just get this anytime you want. You have to be able to go there and have it as a good time. but it gets everybody ready. It gets the vendors ready. It gets the people ready. It, yeah, it was a great restraint on that.
You know? I appreciate that, you know, and it came from a learning experience. You know, first of all, thanks for recognizing, you know, it's really this. I always said the scarcity of it, it makes it more special, you know.
Totally.
And the anticipation of that, basically what we call it over here is the foreplay. You know, sometimes the foreplay is everything when it comes to, you know, it just saves all the, you know, just gets all the buzzes going around. So
totally.
In the beginning, we used to do it a weekly, and we realized something very simple, you know, very quickly. We realized when you do an event once a week, people say, well, it's every week, I'll go next time.
Right.
When it's like once a month, it's like, oh shit, I better go because it's you know, it's rare.
Right.
And we, after like 1 year, we realized that, and we said, you know what? No, we gotta make sure that you know, people understand that it's something special. It's not just like there and then you can always reach out to them. What we did was the opposite. We opened one in different borough on a different day of a different week. So we as production, we have an event every week,
right.
But the locals have it once a month.
Yeah.
And that's kind of like the little trick that we did.
That is a thing of beauty, man. I'm not lying. Like, that is awesome. And that's the thing. Like, I'll admit, that's, like, super New York. Because, like, you guys have the different boroughs, you know, all those things. Like, I mean, out here on the West, we've got, you know, different segments of each city, what have you.
But, suburbs and whatnot.
Right. Yeah, but like you were saying, it's like a suburb. It's kind of like this band, right? It's not a specific, like, yeah. So that is just amazing, man. That is, like, perfect. And then going over, speaking of boroughs, the Harlem Heritage Now, looking through that, partnering with I Love NYC and going over everything in Harlem, what about Harlem drove your whole guys's, you know, basically your hospitality group to say, we want to take this. We want to go with Harlem Heritage.
I mean, this is just another good question, man. You did a good research over here, so I appreciate that.
Yeah.
I appreciate that. You know, I spent the last 12 years of my life between Harlem and the Bronx, South Bronx and Harlem, and there's always, you know, some of the businesses I do in Harlem. And then when we launched the Bronx Night Market in 2017, we stayed in the Bronx for like a good 4 years before we were ready to go and explore other areas in the city. And we really wanted to own in on that. We wanted to know exactly how to do it, how to maneuver, what's the strategy. So when we came to Harlem, we were so polished that people looked at us and said, like, God damn, where did these guys come from? They came out of nowhere, and look how great they are. They're like, you know, they bring in 12,000 people for this event out of in nowhere. You know, and I'll talk to you in a second about like this like nowhere situation, because all our events are based in places that people don't go on a regular basis, which it's just more indication about how great our marketing is, you know. And I know I'm giving my team a lot of compliments, but they're really freaking awesome, all of them, you know.
Yeah.
So we come to Harlem, and people are just saying, God damn it, this crew is incredible. Look at the marketing, look at the organization. They really know how to deal with things. They bring crowds, which is so diverse. Immediately, people gravitate towards us and start talking about like different promotion projects or whatnot. And I carefully took a look into that, and I collaborated with Mr. Vozo Rivers, which is like he's the executive director for the Harlem Arts Alliance. He's an 80-year-old incredible human who has been through everything and that you can imagine in the Harlem scene and in the New York scene. And he sat down to me and says, listen, I want a legacy. I want to leave something over here to showcase my love to Harlem and be respectful for that in the creativity of the social media, in the way that we deal with people. And we start working on the idea, and then we got some grant money from I Love New York, and we launched it. And you know what? People are just going nuts over it, because aesthetically it's incredible. It's the language, the tone, the respectfulness to Harlem's, you know, old school and like the old guard of Harlem and the new vibe. So You know, it's a great project. You know, I really, really like that project.
Yeah, yeah. No, and I mean, perfect. You know, going from 2017 till now. Yeah, I mean, for Mr. Rivers there to be like, yeah, no, we need to bring this to like a social media online presence, pushing that. It's one of those things where, like, I think at least a lot of folks, when it comes to historical things and New York City, there's like, there's Broadway, there's your business sector, there's, you know, something, you know, Chinatown, whatever it may be, there's different segments. And then it comes to Harlem, and it seems like you're going so far back that you're kind of like, oh, it's probably totally different now if you don't live there, right? If you live there, like you were saying, you're like, no, no, there's so much going on. There's like all this stuff going on. And to know that you'll get the heritage part of it, of what was there, for people who don't know anything about it, people like me, where I just know that there was a large presence of not only like jazz, all the new music coming out, whether it was hip hop, R&B, all that stuff, or, you know, just food and the buildings and the things that were there that have made this borough the thing that it is, right? Like, yeah, it's amazing. It's so great.
It's kind of amazing because, you know, a lot of people don't get that, you know, and especially people that don't live in New York. Like, the idea that Harlem, even though it's in Manhattan, it's almost considered like its own borough.
Totally.
Because it has completely different like vibe and culture than the rest of Manhattan. You know, Manhattan is the business and art center of the world. Yes, they got galleries, museum, you got everything that you want. Harlem is the heart of Black America. You know,
right?
This is like the soul of, like, you know, you got the Apollo, you got Melba, you got Sylvia's, you got every major, you know, institution that's kind of, you know, that's been great, you know, in Black history and throughout Black history, comes over here. And culturally, that's the Mecca, you know. So so the energy is intoxicating. You walk around, you know, I'm in Harlem right now. You catch me in Harlem. And if you walk outside the street and you have like those little speakeasies, it's just the middle of the street, nowhere. And all of a sudden, it's like garbage cans and then like steps with lights. Like, oh, what is this? And then you just go down over there and you go through a double door. And it's a little speakeasy, and you got like a jazz trio just playing into the wee hours. And then you go somewhere else, and you got like this like Middle Eastern kind of style music, and you got, and it's just incredible vibe, you know. Yeah. And we're proud to be part of you know, of such a campaign that able to put shine on so many, you know, great organization and businesses in Harlem.
Totally. And then going over another campaign of your guys is the Uptown Oktoberfest. Where did that come from? How did you guys decide, you know what, Oktoberfest, you Germans, we're taking this, we're running, we're going to do this. Like, this is going to be our thing. Because I'm used to the Midwestern Oktoberfests, right? Oh, yeah. You're Minnesota, right? You're Minnesota, you're Wisconsin, all those type of Oktoberfests. And, sausage, beer, we get it. But it just seems like your guys is the way looking at everything. It is brand new in a way. Like, I don't know how to put it. It has a, like, yeah, sure, we're doing the Oktoberfest, but this is like, this is going to be a new vibe. This is going to be a new thing that we're doing.
So, you know, everything that happens in New York, especially in Uptown New York, has its own vibe, has its own style. You get your own little, you know, just different spices going on over there, you know?
Right.
And the idea for the Uptown Oktoberfest, so I got to be honest and admit that, you know, Mask Hospitality, we basically are a hospitality group, but we are really a marketing company, you know?
Right.
We just happen to do badass events, you know? But we marketing, we do branding. We do content, you know, that's what we love. The Oktoberfest was really to fill up a niche that something that I lived in Berlin for 2 years, and I was obsessed with like Oktoberfest, you know, and just like the celebration. just see like everybody from 16 years old to like 95 years old celebrating Oktoberfest. Yeah. Nobody's getting stupid drunk. Everybody's celebrating each other, drinking different beers, eating Wurst, you know, pretzels and spetzels, you know. And it was just incredible. And I thought, like, you know what? If we able to do something over here, and with the flavor of adding a little bit of like the black culture and the Spanish culture and a little bit of the Middle Eastern culture, and just give it that flavor, because you know Oktoberfest is universal at this point. It's not just German. It's like you know, it's a thing. You know, so why not dress it up with a little bit of a you know spice.
Yeah, add a little spice. Yeah, and that's the thing, man. That has got to be why it feels new in a way, is because kind of like what you're saying, even Berlin, it is like a global city at this point, right? There are so many different immigration, like, travels that are going through there, whether it's for, you know, obviously the different wars that are going on in the Middle East, and then you have those that are coming in as refugees, or... I don't know, like Bowie. Bowie showed up in Berlin for a while, and he just was like, I'm going to hang out. I'm going to chill out because it's getting kind of crazy. And so it's like one of those things where, you know, it's like it's a global city. And then to put it in another obviously global city, New York, it's a great fit. It's just like, man, oh, man. That's why it's got that new vibe. It has the spice. That's what it's got.
I appreciate that. I love that you went to Bowie over there, you know, because like, and if there was anybody ever that looks like he should have been a total Berliner from birth, as Bowie.
Right, it's Bowie, yeah.
His whole vibe was just like, I'm, you know, old school German Berliner, you know, I think like the, there's a show, I don't know if you ever got this show, I think it's called, oh shit, I forgot, Netflix show, something about Berlin, Babylon Berlin.
Babylon on what is it, Netflix, right? Yeah, crazy. Babylon Berlin, yeah.
Crazy show. Like the first two seasons over there, we just gave you like a picture of what Berlin looks like after First World War. Yeah. And when it's like the beginning of the Roaring Twenties over there. And, you know, I'm sitting down, I'm catching myself watching a German show, you know, and loving it. You know, and just the music, the vibe. And I think like, so, yeah, why not? It also kind of, it's a thing right now that Berlin is kind of, we call it like, it's either Portland or Brooklyn. So you get that because of the hipster vibe, you know?
Right.
So, it's the motherland of a hipster. It's hipster motherland.
Totally. Yeah. Really? I was going to say that is the aesthetic, but then also kind of the attitude of it is like, I am my own thing. I'm good at my own thing. And I'm going to keep doing it, whether anybody else likes it or if anybody else hates it. But I bet a lot of you are going to join in. That's usually like what happens, you know.
Even in a more like, we're going to do that and we don't care what you think or not.
Right.
Because you mean nothing to us.
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah. I don't pass judgment on you if you don't like this. But also, I do not care about your judgment upon me.
At all.
Yeah. At all. Like, yeah. And that's, that's the thing.
True.
Oh, yeah. And so tell me what it's like. I know I was reading through the Jaffa's Kitchen. That is your own thing. You know, dealing with Ma, I'm guessing. Is that what Emma is?
Yeah.
So, I mean, it was one of those things, looking through that, I can definitely tell the passion there. You mentioned the North African cuisine. Tell me, what has that been, that process been like, especially going into the hospitality? It seems like you're blending the two things together. And like I said, it seems like you've kind of carved this space for yourself. It's really great.
I love it, man. I love what you're saying over here. It's like you're sitting in my brain right now. So I started my career in advertising, you know.
Yeah.
And I worked with BBDO and then I came to New York to go to film school because that's what my passion was. I'm a huge fan, you know, a film buff. I love movies. I wanted to be a writer, director. You know, that's been my passion. Since 13 years old, the way I made money is working in hospitality, in restaurants. You know, yeah. So I had a job in high school that I was washing dishes, in like a little restaurant, and then I was like, I was a line cook in Wendy's and like a kitchen manager in a Hard Rock Cafe, and throughout the 20 years in college and traveling around the world, kitchens and restaurants was the easier way to go. I knew what to do, so no matter where I travel, it was a thing. And when I got to New York finally and went to do the grad in NYU, a film, I'm doing my MFA, my master's in film in NYU. It's the top of the world.
Right.
And I graduated and I started kind of looking around what to do. So I wrote some script and I sold some script. And I realized that this industry, as much as I love it, is not really for me because it takes too long. And I don't have patience. I don't have that patience for like sitting around for 6 years waiting for my movie to come out. So for me, it's like, let me go make money and then I'll go and do whatever movie I want to do whenever I want to do it without asking anybody else. And then I start doing a bunch of stuff. And then food was always there. Marketing was always there because advertising was another passion of mine. Yeah. The film gave me the ability to tell stories and to create content. And eventually, like in 2017, like things started to click. And I find myself like, nobody can sell food like Marco, or hospitality, because Marco loves food, but Marco also knows advertising and Marco knows how to tell stories and create content, So everything came together in such a synergy. And I am very grateful to be in a place today where really every passion that I've had come together to put me where I'm at, you mentioned that, and it's just great, I appreciate that.
No, I mean, it's one of those things where, like you were saying, sometimes it just feels like in your head, you're kind of like, man, if I could just make these things come together, make it blend in into life, and like you were saying, looking through there, I was like, yeah, no, he hit each stone. Like, he got it. He got it all placed in there, and you have this cornerstone, and then you can just start building from there. And that's what I was noticing. I was like, man, he's got a love of this North African cuisine. He's got, this group that can do the advertising. The film, I got to ask. So, obviously, everybody knows Criterion Heads, right? Criterion Collection Heads, that whole thing. Obviously, it's hard to pick a favorite movie, but what's been a movie that sticks in your mind each time you go out to film?
I want to tell you an answer, right? I want to answer in a way, because that shit got me in so much trouble in film school, because when you go to film school, especially in NYU, everybody got to throw in Odyssey 2001 and anything, and I appreciate Kubrick and I appreciate everybody, but for me, one of the best stories ever told, it's Goodfellas by Scorsese, and it's not even about the gangster element of that. It's just the way that he tells the story, and the way that movie is now the cornerstone foundation for monologues, dialogues, flashbacks, tracking shots. Right. Everything that you see nowadays is stolen from what he did in that movie, totally. And for me, I love stories, if you ask me what's my second favorite stories, I'm going to say like something that you're not even going to believe that. Princess Bride, Bob Goldman, another incredible storyteller, screenwriter, so that's what really clicks to me. I mean, I love movies in general. We could talk about it for like 3 days straight.
And I agree with you there, though. That the story is what gets you there. And Goodfellas, pretty much any type of either New York based or gangster film, whether it was American Gangster, any of the Godfathers, what have you, you look at elements. And Goodfellas has it all. I mean, the way that he has the singular character with the narration coming from him, but it's also matter of fact, right? It's just like, this is how it's going to go. This is the way it's heading. it is like mentally and as a viewer, it's a thrill ride from start to finish, even though most of it is talking. It's mostly dialogue. There's a few action scenes and things here and there, and same thing with Princess Bride, right? There's a few quips that everybody remembers, right? Like, I am Inigo Montoya, you prepare to die. Yeah. Like, everybody remembers that kind of stuff.
You killed my father, prepare to die.
You killed my father, prepare to die.
But, but you're right, because if you think about it, like, most of it is not even, not only is it like conversational or talking, but a lot of it is like secondary talking. Like you are
totally.
They tell you what you're seeing. You know,
right? Right.
Think about it like this: I probably watched Goodfellas about 100 times, right?
Yeah.
And a good indication for me for a movie is like, you know, people sometimes say to me like, "Are we watching Game of Thrones? No spoiler alert." And I'm like, I don't care about spoiler alert, because if the story is good, I'll watch it even if I know what the ending is.
Right.
You know, I'm not watching it for the payoff, because half the time I'm a writer. I know what the payoff is going to be like since I started with that. I just want to see how they take us through that journey and keep us intrigued. And you know, I want to say something right now. Not controversial at all, but like the new, what was that, Top Gun.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, talk about bringing back like good old American storytelling action movie. Like, I haven't seen a movie like that since the '90s. You know,
in
that
level. Totally.
Like, you can pack it with Indiana Jones. You can pack it with like a bunch of like The Mummy. You can pack it with a bunch of others. You know, and it was just like, I miss this kind of movies. You know, we miss this.
It reminded me of, in a way, Mad Max Fury Road. Where they're bringing back the whole thing of like, we'll use CGI, but it's for touches. It's not for main sequencing. Like, we got to use it sparingly. And that's the whole thing, is like Princess Bride, Goodfellas, a lot of those movies. It's almost like as you're sitting there, you feel the world of that story surround you. Right.
That's what a good movie do.
Right. Yeah. The fantasy isn't broken. Right.
Exactly.
The second you're in it, you're in it. And then you get to the end. And like you were saying, it's like, I know what the payoff is. I've seen this 1,000 times. I just want to live in that space again. I want to see that story. I want to feel it.
Do
again.
you remember the scene in Goodfellas when the scene that he's like, feel like he's getting chased in the helicopter?
Yeah. Yeah.
I watched this movie 100 times. I know exactly what I can recite the entire movie. Every time I get to that part, my heart starts beating. I get sweat. I'm nervous for him all over again. It is so good that it's like that. You know, elements of like when she said true love, you know, on Princess Bride or some other thing like that. Yeah, you know, I'll give you like a classic modern Tropic Thunder.
Oh, yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
I mean, take a modern classic of like putting a movie and comedy, but just put it in such a good story.
And it's one of those things where it's like almost it is so tongue-in-cheek that it is just like it's a chef's kiss. It's
such a good movie. Another good one I'm not gonna go into that, but like Zombieland.
Another one, world bender. It completely puts you in there and you're along with them. You're like, I'd have rules. I'd have those rules. I know exactly.
And you keep hitting it because, you know, like, you know, you're good, bro. You're good. You're very good. Once a filmmaker able to define the rules of the world, like Hot Fuzz, but what's his name? The British guy.
Simon Pegg.
The old crew over there. Shaun of the Dead, one of the best movies made in the past 20 years.
Yeah.
You know, like, I don't care what anybody said. but when they set the rules of the world so nicely, and they take you to what you called earlier, it's called the suspense of disbelief. You know, when you are completely immersed in the world of the story, and everything matches, and they take you to other journey, it doesn't matter what the ending is. You know, or if you know it. So.
And I got to say, it may sound cheesy, but I'm connecting this all the way back to your night markets and events.
Absolutely.
As I talked about the vibe earlier, right?
Absolutely.
I think people, that is what you're trying to get. You're trying to get a story out of going to these markets, going to these places, having amazing food. I've said it quite a bit with other, you know, podcasts, what have you, but like, humanity seems to be the thing that most of us try to chase or get, and we just don't find the wording for it at the time. Food is humanity. That's what keeps us going. That's what connects us all together. Having a good time with other people in a community, it keeps us all together, but then also knowing that we're in that moment, right? We're in that place. And so, yeah, it sounds like the filmmaking, you're basically like, listen, all of you go into this night market, you guys make your own movie, your own mental movie, right? You make your own thing.
It's kind of crazy now that you're saying that, because I'm realizing right now that you know, for me, while creating that, the entire thing that we're trying to do, and we've been talking for 5 years about creating a seamless experience, so seamless that as the guests come over there, and they don't understand the level of effort, and everything is, you know, you chase that high of like making something so perfect when it's such a seamless experience that everything just functions the way it should be. You know, that's my biggest pet peeve, you know, in this world today about how many things just don't do what they need to do. You know, there's like, you know, there's like a, hey, we know that a taxi driver should take you and should drive properly. And if, you know, that's your job. Your job is to take me safely from one place to another. You're acting up right now. Or like, you know, somebody that needs to fix something, or the electrician that comes over there. You know, it used to be, and I don't want to sound like this old people, that's just like, it used to be.
Are you getting on your porch? Are you getting?
I'm literally with a broom and everything like that. But you know the order, you know, and you said that when there's like when you create an order and things function the way that they need to function in this realm of the story that we all understand the rules.
Right.
Everything's just easier. Everything just seems like so perfect, you know. So that's what we're trying to do. That's what we're trying to do.
And it seems like that's what people are catching on, man. That's what they're catching on with it. And it's like you were saying, bringing, you know, you mentioned it's marketing and those things. Hospitality, man, it is this thing that I think that when people talk about things functioning the way that they should, that hospitality, man, it is a huge function of it. You get done eating something and you can't find a trash can. Oh, my gosh. There's small things like that. There's all those things. Yeah.
It's you know, it's a million things that need to work together in creating an experience and an ambience. I always, you know, I used to own a restaurant. I sold my restaurant in 2015. And one of the things that it is, a customer will judge you and the experience looking at the front door coming in. Yeah. Subconsciously, if the door is not clean and it's not organized, and if I wasn't greeted at the front door, and if I'm not sitting within a certain amount of time, and if it's too hot, too cold, too noisy, too dead, bathroom are not clean, all of that, before you even tasted the food, already creates some sort of like, you know, judgment, you know, scope of like the experience. So if the ambience is off, your point starts from 80. You know, you already lost 20 points on the experience. And then the food better be goddamn good, because otherwise it's like, you know.
Right.
But that's kind of like, it's so, because it's dining or the experience is such a sensory experience. What you hear, how you feel, what you see, your body temperature, and then being in engagement with people. And I got to be honest with you, sadly, it's not looking good for the industry.
Right.
Like the industry, the entire hospitality industry, especially like restaurant. This is, and I'm not complaining, because I'm in the business of the markets, you know. So like, you know, the less people go to a restaurant, the more people come to the markets. I'm okay with that in a way, you know.
right.
No offense to my friends, restaurant owners and whatnot.
Yeah, brick and mortar. But.
But it's you have to, you know, you have to keep advancing. You have to evolve. If you don't evolve, you dissolve. I always say that. You know, if you don't care about your customers, if you don't really make sure that you create experiences and really super experiences, then people have so many choices where they're going to spend their money, and they're not going to be at your place.
Yeah. Well, and that's the thing, is like, whenever I see places that are trying to bring like you were saying, a seamless experience, right? It's one of those things where you can obviously tell when someone has just been directing and they're not experiencing, yep. right? They're like, I'm going to send so-and-so here, so-and-so there. We know we've got this covered, that covered. It's like, have you done a walkthrough? Well, no.
Yep.
And you're like, dude, you got to do a walkthrough. Like, what are you doing? And so it's like, it's one of those things where you have to have that experience because otherwise you're missing what everybody else is getting hooked on. You don't want them hooked and pulled out of the water and then freaking scaled and fried, right? You want to keep the fish thinking that it's like, oh, I'm just in the water. I'm here to keep going. I'm here to keep swimming and have a good time. What do you mean I'm underwater? I breathe like everybody else. And then all out of nowhere, when they get out of the water, that's when it's like, oh, yeah, no, you're no longer a fish now. You're off to your next thing. And that's like, and so I got to say, your experience in this so far, right now, what's the most exciting thing about not only the food industry, but hospitality, whether it's in the markets or something that you're looking forward to?
I'm telling you, small-owned, family-owned, mom-and-pops, like street food, this is where you get the most exciting food. This is where you get the most cultural aspect of them. This is where you get the appreciation of somebody that really does it because they want to do it and not because they think it's a good business when they can hire cheap labor and create some sort of like a fake experience, you know?
Right.
And people are over that. Nobody wants to go to like some place that they're going to pay like, you know, overrated amount of money and get the experience is going to be worthless, you know? So right. For me, it's kind of in the last couple of months or whatnot, it's either a really good street food or like somebody that does something unique culturally, or I'm going to go to like a higher, you know, bracket of like the where I know I'm going to be treated nicely and the ambience is something that people really take serious care about, you know. The mid-level restaurants, you know what, listen, during the pandemic something horrible happened to the industry as far as I'm concerned. I learned how to make chicken wings at home. And once I cross the threshold of making chicken wings at home, you can't get me out of the house unless like you're gonna get me good, you know.
Yeah.
And that's it. You know, the pandemic proved a few things. One, we can all cook,
right?
And we can all do great things from our home. And also taught a lot of people that like the industry can be overrated. You know, I want to tell you something. One of the biggest facts: 2 weeks into the pandemic, about 20% of the restaurants in the country shut down, you know? Yeah. No solid business only has money to last for 2 weeks, you know, like that. What it means is so many of these businesses were in an overdrawn situation, living on eggshells on the last bit of money that like when that happened, they crumbled. So when you have 20% of an industry is built out of like thin air, that is not it just shows you that there's a massive gap. And those are usually the restaurants that have to drop the prices to cater to lower economical statuses. And I thought it was kind of crazy because, you know, I've been trying to say like the industry is not in a good shape, but at the same time, my market is in a great shape, you know, because we take care of the experience, you know. You get food from a lot of cuisine. You get treated in the best way possible. We make sure that it's affordable, hospitable, equitable. We make sure that you are entertained. You are really well fed. There's always free giveaways that we take care of that. So why won't you come to our event?
Yeah,
you
know? Yeah. And I'm glad that you brought up the fact that it's like you have to know what you're making and like how you're making it and how it's gonna be received, how it's going to like actually come to the person and be when they try it. Because I think that's the thing that like every now and again when I go to a restaurant, and you mentioned it, it's mostly brick and mortar, sadly. I don't know why, but it's like you go there and you have this thought in your mind, and some people are like, ah, see, that's the preconceived notion. Like, you shouldn't have this expectation. It's like everybody's got an expectation. You can't, like, they want to have just a good time. They want to have what, it doesn't have to be super authentic, but it has to be something that they go, that is the best that I know of. right, that I've tried, that I've had, and you have to go to that place, or you have to try this place that does this or that. And the main reason why I say all that, not a single time did I mention what it cost.
And it's exactly what it is, because at the bottom line, it is the experience. It's the value that you get. Not about the money, but I think the trend goes out right now is that people saying to themselves, if I want to go out there, and this is like not about the money, but it is about, if I want to go and spend my money right now, I want to have a good experience. I don't want to have like something that I can make it home, or like I want to have a, there's, I don't know how it is in Portland, but I'm going to explain that. There's a weird situation in New York right now with all the street, you know, the street closures, when they have like the outdoor dining, reminisce from the pandemic. So imagine a restaurant, right, has a kitchen that is designed to accommodate 20 tables, and now has 60 tables because 40 of them are outside on the sidewalk, by the way, dangerous, cars driving past, rats running around and all that kind of stuff.
Oh, yeah.
You know, but the restaurant is built for 20 tables, has to serve 60 tables right now. They don't have the time to prep correctly. They don't have the time to deal with the employees correctly, to train correctly. They cannot serve properly. You know, they cannot store things properly, you know, because the kitchen is designed for a 20-seater. Yeah. But we are dealing right now, and some business owners, they get greedy. Oh, no, we're just going to keep it because 60 tables, people get to keep coming. And I'm waiting for the moment when us as a society will say, you know what? You're disrespecting me because you are not giving me the full value, and I can take my money and go to someplace else that I'm appreciated. But unfortunately, it doesn't happen. You know, which is kinda, it's kind of weird for me still, you know?
I know. No, and you're right, though. Is you have to recognize when it is just like this obvious notion that you know in your head, like, why are they doing more than what they should, like table-wise, and you know they can't meet that demand. And you know, a great example, there's a couple places, I'll remain them nameless, what have you, because they're trying their best, right?
I think it's best to keep nameless.
Yeah, yeah, but they have this thing that is basically, like, you have a menu, you wait in a line, you go through that line to where you order your food, and then basically it's like, yeah, we'll give you this number, and so far you're like, this is fast food, right? Like, this is basically that experience. But they're supposed to be giving you, like, mid to mid-high tier level food, right? Whether it's a burger, whether it's, like,
That's what they charge you. They charge you mid to
Exactly. Yeah, they're charging you that high. No waiters, no waitresses. They're just like, there's that. You get your own drink. You get your own sauces. And once you're done, you put away your own plate, your own everything else. You do the, and they call it like the fast casual in a way, but they
That's not fast casual. You know, fast casual is a completely different thing. This is a reminisce of like what certain business owner did during the pandemic. They find a way to kind of work through the pandemic with the regulation. And then they realize, oh, we don't need to have servers and people will come over here to the counter. So we know pandemic is over. We can kind of go back to normal, but we're not going to do that because we make more money like that. And people not saying anything. So you know, we're just going to keep it as long as nobody says nothing.
Yeah, and it, like, any time I saw the little tip screen come up, I wondered in my head, like, I'm a good tipper. I tip all the time. I never want to say, like, no, I'm not going to tip you. Because it's like, yeah, that's how we do it here in America. It's all weird. But at the same time, I'm kind of like, why should I tip if I'm doing all the work? Like, if I'm getting all my own stuff, all you've done is basically jot down my order and cooked it. Like, is the tip going? I pretty much every time try to make sure it's like, please tell me this tip is diversified among everybody in the back. Like, please tell me this tip isn't going to, like, your manager and they're divvying it out. Yeah. Like, tell me there's a percentage here that all of you guys get. And if that's the case, it's like, at least it's fair. At least it's, you know, equal.
But, you tip it, you tip it the kitchen, guys, you know? And it's right. Like, I went to a restaurant on Sunday, and I'm not going to mention again. And then obviously they had like some stuff during the pandemic. So basically, the only way to sit in a restaurant, you know, it's a casual dining. It's not a fancy restaurant.
Right.
If you have to order, there's a 75 prefix menu that you can choose two items, appetizer and a main course. $75, that's the start of the day, right? And half the stuff in the menu is there's an upcharge of $10, you know. So like it's like mostly $85 a person to just like eat like simplest of food, you know. Like, I'm not talking something fancy, you know.
Right.
And I'm
right.
Like, and I'm like, I get it. In the pandemic, it was a lot of demand. It's by the ocean, you know. Like you really wanted to minimize and really focus. We've been open for like a year now. Okay, it's time to roll back some of this bullshit and just go back to like, you know, because you know what? It's inflation anyway. Our money is not worth as much as it used to be anymore. You know.
Yeah.
So that's why I keep saying, and I've been fighting this war battle in New York to say like, you guys need to wake up because the industry is about to crash. Because people at one point just like gonna stop and say like, listen, we don't want to deal with this anymore. We don't want to go eat in places that are disrespectful for us and to for our money, you know. Because and that's what you see, like.
Yeah.
But you know what? Again, it's hard for me to preach against something that actually contributes to my own business, you know, because quite a bit. Then I sound very hypocritical and very, you know, so. But yeah, because you know, it's just like, of course you would say that, you know, you are the competition,
right? Yeah, you're basically saying, listen, I don't want you to pass this test, but I'm giving you the answers to the test, okay?
I mean, bottom line, you know,
yeah.
Well,
man, oh man. Well, the last thing I was going to hit is we've talked about the food. We've talked about everything going through, whether it was, you know, education background, doing the film and everything else. But the markets themselves, the flea markets, the Harlem Bazaar, what's been some of the cool things that are coming out of, you know, basically the things that are the more creative side of things rather than just food industry that you guys have seen that's like, yeah, this is cool. Like, this is all getting incorporated.
You know, I think like the, you know, we touched a bit about it earlier, like the idea of like the, our ability right now. Okay. So let me take back a little bit. And this goes back to my story, but it's all going to make sense. At one point after college, after I got my grad, and then I started working for different company. I did my own thing, and I started working for different company. And I realized, and I started working for Thrillist, you know, and I helped them open the video department. I didn't like it. I worked for Jay-Z's company. I didn't like it. They were doing music video. And then I started, you know what? I can't do corporate no more. Let me do my own thing. And I opened my own business to do marketing. And I realized that clients are worse than corporate, you know, because at least in the corporate, you know, if you work in a corporate structure, at least everybody know what they can't do work that day. They're all doing the same thing. Clients, let's say you like you're working on a video, it's like, hey, can I have a video? Is it ready? You know, it's like, I mean, like, so do you know what I mean? There's no reasonable expectation of like how much thing cost, how long did it take to make, how hard, you know. So I realized like, I don't want to do clients either. I'm like, okay, Marco, you can't just like not work for corporate and not have clients. It doesn't work like this.
Right. Yeah.
And then I discovered a new, you know, I start thinking about it. You know, I tanked. Usually I tank, you know, I just go into the tank and just start thinking. And then I'm saying, what if I only work for myself? I'm like, okay, keep going. Well, I'm going to create certain businesses because of my market ability. I'm going to invest my money, create certain business models that I will own, and then I will market them. And then slowly I can start losing clients. The more I make money from my investment in my businesses and other businesses, I can lose clients. So 2017, I started that. By the time the pandemic hit, we only have two clients left and we were self-sufficient. Certain businesses, not only the businesses of the market and whatnot, but then I was in a position to take some money and invest in other brands that I like by a combination of some sweat equity and some money investment, right? So I'll go to, let's say you have a business that I like, and I say to you, hey, how about I give you some money and I'll do your marketing for this period. I want to, let's talk about 15-20% of the business. Now, I don't work for you. I work for me with you. And then the business model starts changing, and then pandemic hit, and I just fired my last two clients. I said, yeah, I'm not interested anymore. And now I own pieces about 8 companies, including my own companies, and we just work for my companies.
Right.
And again, this is another way of like Marco is taking the hard way, but to create his own path in life that suits this. So like, I don't know if it's inspirational or delusional. It could be a little bit of both.
Right. Yeah. I mean, and that's the thing is like, I think anytime, you know, everybody brings up the big CEO names, whatever they may be, right? Your Musks, Bezoses, all that stuff. They had to have delusion a little. That has to happen. You have to have
a lot, you know, a lot.
Yeah. Yeah. You have to have that thing of like, I'm going to try to do this. That's the goal. And so I'm going to go for it. And yeah, you've created it, man. You've done it. You've gotten those things going. And yeah, it's one of those things where, like you were saying, the sweat equity, there is something to be said about how that equity, it holds a little bit more of a personal touch as well. It's not just the check. It's like, I did this for me, for us. This is where we're going to go. But at the same time, like you were saying, it's like, but we're in it together. But I'm kind of my own thing. I'm building this out. I'm guessing that was like Color Raw and then Perros Locos. I saw that with their stuff they're going through.
You're really good, bro. You're really good, man. You know?
Yeah.
But that's kind of this. I identify good people. First of all, good people. They're doing good things. And I know that they're going to need my help to scale up, you know. And that means they need some money. They need marketing. They need business development. All things that my team comes in and brings and scaling those businesses from here to here in a very short time, because we can do that. And then for me and my team is like, we're working on something that we care about, because this is our business that we care about, and then we want to make sure that it's successful. So and people look at me sometimes and say like, you son of a gun, you like, you know, listen, it all came from the fact that I just didn't want to work for anybody else, because I'm not good working for other people, you know. Like I don't like being told what to do, you know. And that's, which I think is the first quality that you need to have,
right?
For like, you know, for to be an like, you know, so
totally,
yeah,
yeah. Being an entrepreneur, you got to be able. What is it? You got to be able to work 80. So that you don't work 40, like that's
What's that? Entrepreneur will work 100 hours a week, so you won't have to work 40 hours for somebody else.
Right. Yeah, and it's very true. You have to have your heart in it, but you also have to have the sweat. You got to be able to say, I'm going to go for it. Like,
man, it's not easy. It's not easy. It's a gamble every day. You know, you have to take after time you with your back to the wall. You know, but you know what? If you get to that point when you get to pave your own lane, man.
Yeah.
Nothing feels like that. Yeah. Nothing in the world feels like that. Yeah. I'm telling you.
Right. Having your own highway is really nice. I'm not having to share lanes. I can just
that's where I hope we added.
Yeah. You know, so. Well, I'm telling you, all of it is looking great. It's been great talking with you, Marco. Throw it out there. Plug away. What is your things coming up here real soon that you're wanting to give a shout out to?
So, thanks. You know, I'd love for people to kind of, you know, you did a great job of like looking at our website, maskhospitalitygroup.com, some of the project in the campaign. Our baby right now is like we eat at night. This is something that I think is going to revolutionize the way that people travel, you know, because we did long surveys to understand what people are looking for. And like the food part is becoming such a critical decision maker in the process of planning then your next trip anywhere.
Yeah,
we know that we hit something, we hit gold. And I know, you know, so we eat at night. I urge everybody to check it and follow that, you know. And in general, you know, we're coming to a city near you soon, you know, with like our night market experiences and more.
Oh, man, I can't wait to see it. I want more of it all. It has been really great, whether it's the night markets or that we eat at night. Because like you were saying, that is one of the main reasons. Any type of vacation, any trip, anytime somebody's like, hey, I've got a wedding at blank, I'm like, food, that's what I'm looking up. The next thing, it's going to be where I'm going to go to eat, what's near this hotel, what's near all this stuff. And so you start going and you start researching. I might do more research into that than I do the plane ticket.
That's what people said. People told us that they spend more time in understanding, and not even attraction anymore. The attraction is like the cool local joints to eat, places that locals will go eat, night market experiences, late night grab, all this kind of stuff. And we like, I knew it 2 years ago. I knew like we have to do that. And you know what? I'm doubling down on that, you know. So.
Totally. Well, I'm doubling down on you, Marco. Check it out. MASC, hospitalitygroup.com. Go to the We Eat at Night. Get the email newsletters. Get it for all of those things if you're in the NYC area. Do the night markets, the Harlem Bazaar, the Fordham Flea Market. Do it for the Harlem Heritage Now. Check out all of their pages. It is wonderful. The history, the story, the about section was awesome. Going through each one, it's amazing. Check out their products as well. Color Raw, Perros Locos, which is the whole, like, talk about add a little spice, amazing. And then even spicier spices, just hot damn sauce. That's what you got to check out as well. I want to buy a bottle of the OD. That sounds
great.
Yeah, I love hot sauces. I don't care if it makes my sinuses empty. I don't care if I look like I do in the middle of the day walking, right, and I'm hotting and sweating like crazy. That's the good stuff. And then Wandering Barman. Whoa. That is a great deal. Already made cocktails, basically in a bottle for you to just have at home. Like you were saying, no, like, is the bartender good enough to make this? No. We've already perfected it. We bottled it. It's coming to you. Handcrafted cocktails. Marco, thank you for joining me. It has been great talking with you. You are welcome back anytime, good sir, to come on.
I appreciate you, man. This is like, and I appreciate, you know, you doing your homework, man. It was a great bunch of questions and insight over there, you know. And we should definitely, like, you know, I want to give you a top five movie recommendation when you get a chance.
Totally. I can do that right after I hit this stop record button. Thank you, my little convenants, listening in, watching us on YouTube. I'm going to send everything to Marco's way. Convo Sessions. Check it out with Marco Shalma. Thank you again, good sir. And we will see everybody next time. Bye-bye.
This episode of Culinary Convo was written, produced, edited, and created by yours truly, Devin Rehm, and is a part of Mouthful Productions. Please check us out on Twitter, Instagram, Facebook at Culinary Convo, and our website, culinaryconvo.com, for recipes, episodes, resources, and send an email to culinaryconvopod@gmail.com with your fan suggestions or recipe submissions. You can also support the podcast by going to anchor.fm/culinaryconvo1/support so we can purchase cooking or audio equipment to help create a better podcast, or by using the funds to help further the exploration of Culinary Convo by ordering subscription boxes, food kits, or ordering food products to review. So shout out to our first supporter, Convonaut Dylan. Thank you. I also want to give audio credit to Soundtrap for our intro, transitions, and outro music. Thank you.